from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Look at that. We're back for another fantastic week of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And now, see, last week we didn't have Ara, we did have Rich. This week we don't have Rich. I'm sure he'll be here in a minute. And we do have Ara.
I wonder if he's got strep throat like I had last week.
Maybe. But what I think is interesting is that it was your birthdays this weekend.
Yes.
So what were you, like, Sunday?
Sunday something like, yeah. So you suggested to me that my body, as my birthday present, gave me a whole load of strep throat.
Yeah. Which sounds fantastic.
And it was fantastic, but actually I think that my real present was having the strep throat go away right before my birthday.
So. I took note of that. You said it was gone on, what, Saturday? And your birthday was Sunday?
Yeah. Well, it was... I don't even want to get into it, but it was bad times.
For my birthday, Rich gave me a broken... Excuse me. For Rich's birthday, Rich gave me a broken foot pedal for Rock Band.
That's fantastic. Maybe I'll be so lucky to get something broken as well.
I can only dream.
Although seeing as though I've mentally sacked Rich from coming on the show, maybe he won't show up.
Well, I was determined that I would just keep his, since he's getting Rock Band 2 next week, right? So he'll get his new fancy metal drum pedal, and I'll just keep his. And he's
quite the drum aficionado, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And he likes to stomp the hell out of that thing. And he's convinced that you can just call him up and they'll give you a new foot pedal, right? I know they gave you new guitars and stuff when they didn't work, but the foot pedal? Like, what was ever wrong with the foot pedal?
I don't know.
But supposedly, I don't have
gargantuan sized feet, so I couldn't tell you.
Supposedly they mail those suckers out like candy, but luckily he's got one to just give me, so I'm happy about that. Penn's asking in our chat if you heard the show from last week.
I totally didn't. In fact, it's my policy
not to listen to the show.
Never listen to my own voice.
No, do you know if I ever listen? I never listen to our shows.
No, but you perhaps don't do it deliberately. It's not a part of whatever. I deliberately avoid listening to myself.
Well, for one, I try not to miss any of the shows, given that I host it.
Well, that's quite important.
Right, but on top of that, you know, I have to listen to it partially, just getting it up on the internet, and that's enough for me. I don't need to hear my own voice.
But you did kind of briefly mention that you guys had a quite interesting topic that I sense that you haven't spoken about it.
Well, I think that's why he's asking, right? Because it was his topic, right? And so we had a listener who's written to us in the past, quite upset, actually. The idiosyncratic idiot wrote to us.
Well, at least he's idiosyncratic about it.
And because we were talking about last week, for those who don't recall last week's show or perhaps didn't listen, basically what happens when you get old, you don't really have time for certain games, which is a topic we've touched on in the past, right? But maybe we had a little twist on it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what you guys discussed, but to me, from what that sounds like, I think it's purely just fatigue. You've done it enough times already, you know what it's about. You know, I've mentioned on the show maybe, you know, a while ago that I get tired of playing games a lot of times. Not, you can frame it as because I have better things to do, but I think that you could just as validly frame it as you've done that activity, that type of pattern so many times before that it's just not novel to you anymore. You know, and that's how I feel about games. There's a lot of games that I look at, and I look at it for 5 seconds, and whether it's an honest observation or not, whether it's true or not, I feel like I've seen this all before, and I know exactly where it's going to go, and I have no intention of, you know, re-experiencing that pattern that I've experienced hundreds of times already.
And that's actually something that I was talking about, I think last week and the week before, or maybe just one of them, about how someone I work with came to me and was discussing how he loves World of Warcraft. And I was saying, no, that game is clearly horrible. And all the people who play it are, I don't know, just addiction experts.
Well, certainly people have different thresholds for
repetition.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's pretty clear that as you grow out of childhood, you lose your taste for repetition. So, like, unless it's porn, I pretty much can't watch the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah.
And even then, I need different porn.
That's true.
But
That's like the kids who watch, you know, what, Robin Hood the cartoon 800 times.
And Barney and whatnot.
And they love it, and they just love the fact that they're watching it for the 800th time.
Yeah, but I can't do that with video games. So I told them, I said, I would rather take, you know, over the course of a year, 5 interesting 4-hour games than, you know, paying my monthly fee for World of Warcraft repeatedly.
Yeah, even games like, you know, I've been playing Morrowind again lately, right? And I'm continually going back and forth through this process of...
You're breaking down our entire argument by saying you're going back to a game you previously played for 100 hours.
Yeah, no, only 50. Excuse me. Where I only ended up visiting like 3 towns, okay? Which was like, it's a speck on the map. So I was like, okay, I'm going to play it again because I love this type of game. I'm just going to explore parts of the world I never explored before. New experience, right? Well, I keep on vacillating between these two points where, you know, I love this game. This is fantastic. And gosh, what the hell am I doing? This is so flippin' boring. I'm grinding around. I'm walking around, jumping up and down these inclines to get my acrobatics up. I'm going and I'm stealing stuff to buy, to get money, you know, and it's just this, I've done this so many times. And yet after playing it for a few minutes, sometimes I realize that it's just an incredibly hopeless, useless activity and I'm sick of it. And I just throw it away in disgust. I mean, not physically.
I wonder what sort of reward is given in a game like Morrowind.
But here's the funny thing, right? And then before I get to that, if I'm away from it for a few days, then I start pining for it. I'm like, gosh, I really want to play this now. What sort of reward? It's interesting because it's an open-ended style game, right? So really, the only kind of reward you get is by kind of watching different, you know, finding different quests. It's extremely hot in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I don't know what that's all about.
Something tells me the listeners can't tell.
But, yes, well, I can.
Right. So, but I mean, every game, like I sit down and I play something.
It's not like a special reward, you know? This is why I'm struggling with actually articulating what the reward is exactly.
Man, there's got to be something. You sit in front of a TV and what do I get out of playing a video game? Like nothing. Because I've watched pixels move on a television at
well,
the end.
Well, there's
the
a few
person.
Things, right? There's one aspect is, you know, the exploration aspect of, you know, ooh, this is a new part of the world. And they actually do a pretty good job of this in the Elder Scrolls games because you're really curious about, you know, this new space that I'm entering. What's it like? What's in here? They do a pretty good job of surprising you with things. So that's one kind of reward that you get out of it.
Maybe we should dedicate a whole show to this, but I'd like to categorize gaming reward, right?
Well, the other thing is the grinding thing, obviously, right?
That is not a reward.
No, it's a reward. It's an incremental reward. It's certainly a reward. Maybe you think it's not a satisfying reward or a sufficient one.
But I mean, okay, so I can see stuff. What's the feedback you get from a video game? Visuals?
Right, visuals.
Audio.
Oh, yeah.
And then perhaps social aspect, right?
Right.
So if I play Pac-Man, then I have bragging rights over my friend.
Right, and they kind
better.
Of, the Elder Scrolls games kind of have this quasi-social aspect because you get involved in these quests and these factions, and there's these societal relations between characters in the games. They're NPCs, they're not real people, obviously, right? But they have relationships, and you know, one guy wants to kill you to kill this other group, and the other guy stole something from someone else, and these two, you know, shopkeepers are having a rivalry, and you know, there's all these kinds of interesting stories. So like uncovering these stories and kind of learning about these relationships and things like that, that's kind of a reward in and of itself.
So storyline is inherently interesting. Penn is saying that in our chat room, by the way, at chatterboxgameshow.com, the satisfaction of victory in completing a challenge. So I guess overcoming, like, just the feeling of accomplishment.
I guess, but I wouldn't say that that's so much an element in Morrowind because the simulation factor is so heavy. That
I'm just arguing games in general.
Yeah, there's that. The funny thing is, from what Penn said, what I find really interesting is that there are a lot of people who will gain, their satisfaction seems to be directly proportional to the difficulty of what they're attempting, regardless of what the intrinsic reward is. Like, they love it just because it's so effing hard.
Yeah, and in the end, all you've still done is watch Pixel move.
And I don't know. That doesn't do it for me. Apparently, British people love that for some reason. I don't know what that's about.
Anyway, stay tuned. Next segment, we may or may not have an interview with the international producer of Spectrobes for the Nintendo DS. Spectrobes Beyond Portals.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, guys. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Looks like Rich has joined us. Apparently, my psychic powers need a lot more work.
Do you want to be our guest today, Rich?
Psychic powers.
Maybe we should pretend that Rich is the international
producer. For Spectrobes Beyond
Mortals. Until any challengers appear.
Spectrobes.
Spectrobes. You haven't been listening to the show since its inception,
right?
But if we have any listeners, from,
or since I've started,
if we have any listeners from like 4.5 years ago, they'll remember that's one of the first bits we ever did on the show, like show 12 or 2 or 3 or something.
Was that fake interview?
No, it was after Nate got here, right? So for the first several shows, we had Don. It was Don, Alon, and then we had Alon and Nate. And Nate Vig, like, we were supposed to have some guest, and he never came on, so we just had Nate pretend to be him for, like, the whole bit. It was really funny. At least people thought it was funny. I actually didn't think it was that funny, but everyone reacted really well to it, so it showed I don't know what our listeners
I'm disappointed because I thought that I just thought of that on the spot.
No,
so guys, Electrobes.
Electrobes.
It's awesome. Think well, Pokemon, but not as good.
So here's the thing, listeners.
I have no idea what the game's about.
Well, a few minutes ago, I told our listeners we may or may not have an interview, and that's because this is put together like at such the last minute. I was talking to the marketing person last week. They did this this radio media tour is what they called it for Spectrobes Beyond the Portals, and like they're really doing this media blitz. They have the Japanese producer, the guy who actually is credited with making the game. Like he was signing autographing games at Nintendo New York. Just last weekend, and so like people love this game, or kids like this game anyway. I guess it's made by Disney, and it's their first like independent
published. Thank you very much.
No. Did you just say independent?
It's actually made by them.
Developed by Jupiter.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. Is it?
So it doesn't even matter if it's the first published game by Disney, because wasn't Pier just published by Disney?
No, it's not published.
Well,
guys,
they say that like it's their first
intellectual property that's independent of like their first video game
pre-existing Disney
IP.
Right.
That's where my word independent was coming from.
Which is really strange. It's a very strange qualifier because it's a very rather narrowly construed
really
category.
Weird thing that we did.
It would
doesn't
only apply
matter.
To them, right?
Right.
I mean, them and Hanna-Barbera.
Because isn't Disney owned by some other large company that owns a video game company as well?
Know.
So it doesn't
and,
really
and
matter.
And they own porn companies here, and ABC is run by Nazis or something. I don't know.
It's not Universal. I don't know.
Viacom.
Listen,
Viacom.
We're getting off the subject.
I don't know. Making up stuff.
My point is.
Anyways,
I thought it was very interesting that they were having this media tour, radio media tour. If you have a radio show on October 7th and you want to interview the international producer.
I was actually surprised because I've never seen a press release like that before.
No. It was very interesting to me. Not because I care so much about the game, but I like the idea that they're doing this radio media blitz for a little DS game. And so I wanted to have him on it. And we're going to have Tim Fitzrandolph, not the Japanese producer who's actually credited with making the game. We're going to have Tim Fitzrandolph, the international producer, who, by the way, was the quality assurance lead on the original Spectrobes. I don't know how you make that jump quality assurance.
There's a first one?
Yeah, this is beyond.
Apparently he was very good at what he was doing.
So this isn't the first.
No.
So it doesn't even matter anymore because there was only Electrobes game that came out.
It was well received. Anyway.
It doesn't matter anymore.
So I'm very interested in the idea of this marketing thing and how he would go about doing it.
Like, maybe let's just talk about the questions that we would have asked him.
I'm curious. How do you prep someone to do this bit? Like, are there things you're not supposed to talk about?
I'm sure there are.
Are you just wanting to get on there since you know it's pretty hard to get on? And like, what? We're the only radio show on terrestrial radio except, like, one other who's actually an all-games guy. Like, Evil Avatar Radio is on, like, college radio, right?
Yeah, it is.
Other than that, it's all podcast, man. Mm-hmm. So what was this guy talking to?
It sounds like they've structured
San
it.
San Diego this morning or something?
Yeah, it sounds like they structured it for, you know, morning radio talk shows.
Yeah.
I bet you they had him on.
I guess it's the right market because it's moms buying their kids games. Right?
They probably had him on the Radio Factor, is my guess.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk to him about marketing and that stuff, but unfortunately, we put the whole interview together. Like, I got the confirmation email and everything.
I even got the confirmation email.
Yeah.
I even got it, and I don't even have an email.
So, anyway, we got it confirmed and everything, but apparently it fell apart since. Our phone is not ringing. So
it's definitely not ringing.
You want to call us, though, you can. Whoever's listening, 866-536-1100. And you can read more about the show at chatterboxgameshow.com and get the phone number and the times and all that. But am I wrong? Like, we're still Pacific time, right?
Yeah, we're still
definitely
Pacific.
Definitely still Pacific.
Yeah. So,
you know what we should talk about?
Sure.
We should talk about, one,
the
memory upgrade.
Yeah, well, we plan
Two,
on it.
TGS.
Oh.
I've never been less interested in TGS than I ever have.
I don't care about the games. Here's the interesting fact that I read about is that there were even people at the Microsoft booth.
You know I'm a super Japanophile.
At TGS, there were people at the Microsoft booth.
Okay, what do they usually have, robots?
Not only were there people there, there was like an hour and a half wait to get into the Microsoft booth.
Yeah, I heard there was like some kind of like record or something. There was a lot of people there.
Like,
is your point that Microsoft's finally getting attention in Japan?
Yeah, that's my point. My point is like...
Well, this is true. They do have unprecedented sales in Japan at this
instead
point.
Of like going to the Sony booth or the Nintendo booth, like the Japanese people should do, they're actually interested in something awesome like Microsoft and the 360. Because Microsoft has put so much money into getting...
When did we hire a fanboy?
I know.
For the show.
No, but like Microsoft has put so much money into trying to get like the JRPGs on the 360 and not on the PS3, and it's finally paying off.
Yeah.
They put a lot of money into it.
They finally got it right. But let's talk about something they got wrong. So you wanted to bring this up. And by the way, we had a perfectly good topic that we were mentioning before the break. We hit break and it's like our brains fried and we forgot about this.
I showed up.
Yeah. So maybe next week or maybe later in the show.
I think I said all I had to say about that. So.
Okay, good. Then we will move on. So what you were just saying, the memory upgrade... The 360. So
what is this? I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Can I explain? So,
well, we need to let me preface with history. All right, I'll do the history. You can do the present. All right. In the past, Microsoft didn't have a video game system. Only Sony did, and some other people that nobody cares about.
Nintendo. We have to go back that far.
Yeah.
Nintendo
Microsoft
had
said
one,
we're gonna make an amazing video game system. It's gonna be black and it's gonna take over the universe. Well, actually, we don't expect to ever make money, but eventually we'll make money in our video games department.
It'll actually be very dark green, but it'll look black.
They make the Xbox, and they say, oh, it's so awesome. It has an internal hard drive, so you can save data. Blinks the Cat couldn't be made on any other system. It can only be made on a system with a hard drive. And so they release the game.
Blinks the Cat sucked.
Well,
all the games that require a feature suck.
Yeah, well, let's dismiss that.
Blair needs the six-axis crap game.
All right. Well, I require you to be quiet right now.
Continue.
Yeah, I
apologize.
Don't make me flex my psychic muscles and oust you from
all right.
the studio.
So they say, we're going to make this awesome system. It's going to come with a hard drive. That's going to make it way better than the PlayStation. So kick ass. And they release it. It has a hard drive, 8 full gigs. And it actually enables it to do some cool things. Caches a lot of game content, speeds it up.
Pirating.
You can download stuff. You can download, like... things for Dance Dance Revolution, new songs, and whatever.
Pirate right? games.
And pirating games. It certainly made that a possibility, too.
With ease.
Yes. But my point is, they decided this was a good feature. And then came along the Xbox 360, and they said, all right, we'll give you a hard drive, but only if you really want it. Otherwise, no hard drive.
Well, now, they got to cut costs, right? I mean, I think that was the only reason why they didn't. Hard drives aren't free. It's not...
No, but they so overcharged for that hard drive. What they dropped the price for a 20-gig hard drive. They dropped it $100 just to take off the hard drive. So they were losing money by selling the core. If they had sold only the premium units with hard drives.
I think it's kind of like the value menu, you know, at McDonald's.
They were killing themselves to get a $300 version out. But what they did was they shot themselves in the foot by making sure that not everybody had one. And by now, even though people might have purchased it.
Well, certainly once you have... variations on the console that are large enough like that, you're effectively splitting the market one way or another.
Yeah, and now, next month, they release the new Xbox experience. That's what it's called, right?
Yes.
This just makes me seethe with anger.
Okay, so as if it weren't annoying enough because they're just copying Nintendo.
Just don't call it an experience. I mean,
hey,
what kind of PR jargon is this?
Well, we could have asked Tim Fitzrandolph from Spectrum.
The thing that bothers me about experience is it doesn't start with an X. They actually spelled it correctly. They should have experience.
Well, no, because then like parental
like
groups will complain.
Like X hyphen periods, that'd be way cooler.
All right. Enough of that.
Okay.
So they're releasing this. And for that, like you make your own avatar and all that jazz. How are you going to store that? How are you going to leave it anywhere if you don't have a hard drive and you don't have a memory card?
I don't know, but I think the avatars look dorky as hell.
All right. Well, different topic. Rich, tell us about this new program that Microsoft has.
You don't. Basically, without any sort of storage, you can't use Xbox Experience. Like with the avatars and stuff like that. So, if you have a core Xbox or an arcade Xbox, you can A, with a core, get a 512 megabyte memory unit for free, or B, get a 20 gigabyte hard drive for $20. You go on the website, go do, I have a core, and they go, okay, what do you want? You
so
pay
hold
them
on.
Money.
This is only if you have the core system. Do you have the privilege of purchasing it?
If you have a premium,
you
don't need it.
If you have the arcade, you can still buy a cheap hard drive.
$30,
right?
20 gigabyte hard drive, 3 months of Xbox Live.
All right, we'll continue discussion about this next segment. We'll be right back.
Me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And we're back. Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, sponsored by UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. Head over to uat.edu to learn more about the University of Advancing Technologies programs and how you, too, can be a game producer, designer, level designer, anything you want to be. All right, so we were talking about Microsoft, their Xbox, and their seeming incompetence, which I'm sure this is just a marketing move, so they could say it released for $300, but it had such long-lasting effects that
I don't understand how why you're amounting this to incompetence.
Because
they should have had memory built into the 360 to begin with. They should have had it. They should have every system had
flash memory is
but
not
so
that
didn't.
Expensive.
I'm actually glad that they're it's modular, so people who don't have it can get it, okay? So no problem. I don't know. I don't really care. Why do you guys care?
No, I think the memory upgrade thing is cool.
Because now games don't build in stuff like caching. And they don't do cool stuff that they could have done because they
games
the
still
developers,
have caching
because they're not guaranteed to have that technology.
Yeah,
but I don't really care about that either.
A lot of games have a caching ability that it can basically detect, is there a hard drive? Yes. Okay, let's cache. Is there not a hard drive? Okay, let's not cache.
Yeah, but you remember
one thing
first
with
came
Oblivion?
Out, allow it?
Like there's a lot of loading problems in Oblivion because with the hard drive, it caches it if there is a hard drive there, and sometimes it goes, okay, well, there's not a hard drive now, but there was, and it got really messed up to where there's a lot longer load times. So you had to, like, reset the cache on the hard drive, basically.
Yeah,
anyways,
some kind of crazy
anyways if there's a hard drive there, the games can utilize it, but it's not required to have the hard drive. This is the whole point Microsoft was trying to do to begin with. But now it's kind of like, okay, so we're going to have this thing, and now, okay, you do need memory, so we're just going to give it to you or give it to you cheaper than it should be.
Yeah, well...
So,
I think they should have included it. That's all. I mean, they built the system to accommodate the hard drive.
Why yeah, but I mean now, I mean, think of it this way though. Like now, if you buy the arcade unit, it's still only $200. Plus, you get during the holiday season 6 free games, not just 5, because you get something. I don't know, some crappy game with it, but
they're putting family-friendly games in this.
Yeah,
season.
I know you get Lego Indiana Jones and Kung Fu Panda on the premiums now.
Yeah.
But anyways, they're basically saying, okay, if you want to use this new feature that we're letting you have, go online. We're going to send you a unit for free, or you can pay $20 to get the hard drive. So,
by the way, I would totally opt to do that, get the hard drive. I don't know. It struck me as interesting because I thought it was a dumb move to not include it in the beginning. But that's fine. Listen, if you don't want to agree with me, it's not like we have to be friends anyway. I don't care. I never liked you anyway.
I don't care. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, but now Microsoft has a $200 console and Sony still has a $400 console.
Yeah, so
the 360 is cheaper than the Wii.
When are they dropping that price?
Is really what it comes down to.
This is what I'm waiting for here.
Oh, the PS3?
Yeah, I need to play this Gaia 3.
I think what you need to play is Little Big Planet.
Neither.
All right.
Fallout 3.
Says the person with the...
So there's got to be a few of the
title emblazoned on his shirt.
Do you guys know that Gamecock sold itself?
I did see that. They sold to another publisher.
This I'm kind of surprised because it's... I mean, Gamecock's a rather new company.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's almost like, can we still even... Is this still a startup? It's not been around for that long.
They've been around for 2 years, tops.
2 years?
But, like, they're like this huge, oh, we're the indie game developer, publisher, and now they sold to another publisher, so that, like, they're not indie anymore.
Is that, like, totally selling out?
Yeah, it's like totally not indie anymore. It's like the opposite of indie. It's selling to a larger publisher.
Well, It's the video game industry. What do you expect?
And that's what makes this interesting, though.
Yeah.
Is that they sold out. And, like, they were always guys you could access and talk to at the conventions and whatnot. And so I'm really curious to find them again. And
you can playfully call them cocks, and it's funny.
Yes. Well, that's also true. All right. So I know we had a couple of things to talk about, and for some reason right now.
We should talk about Spore and digital rights management.
You mentioned this.
Yeah, this is something
DRM
that
is something that's come up before.
Well, it's not a new subject. I mean, it was new when Spore came out, but Spore's been out for some time now. But this utterly fascinates me because game publishers, since time immemorial, have come up with all manner of bizarre methods of copy protection.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of digital rights management, or DRM, way of copy protecting something, or at least the discouraging piracy, I guess, is just, it's morphed, it's transmogrified into such an unrecognizable beast that I don't even understand what it accomplishes.
I'm curious, what's the earliest form of copy protection that you can recall?
That I can recall?
I know what mine is.
Yeah?
Don't copy that, Flappy.
It was, no, not the commercial, come on. I mean, it's something printed in the manual.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Like, what was word 6, paragraph 5,
right.
page 43?
Or actually, 43? You know, we didn't really get to it when we were talking to, you know, Matt Barton, talking about the old CRPGs, but apparently back in the day, one thing that was not uncommon was they would actually print pages and pages of the story's plot in the manual. So when you got to the appropriate part of the game, it said, oh, now you can read page 64. Right? And so that's how you got to access the game. Half of the game was, at least in terms of plot, on the manual, and the rest was in the game itself.
So, like, you're playing the game, and then all of a sudden you read, and the dragon breathed heavily.
Or whatever. I mean, you know, ostensibly it was more interesting than that.
Well, there always has to be a dragon involved.
Was that more of a copyright thing, or more of a, like, okay, we can't fit all this text on a floppy disk?
No, it was a copyright thing. Come on.
Because, like, I don't know, man, those old floppies, they can't really hold much data.
They can hold some text. I don't think that was a problem.
If it's 65 pages of story, that's a lot of text.
I'm just making up numbers.
That's,
I don't,
like,
think it was
more than
that.
12 kilobytes of data.
I think they had room for more than 12 kilobytes.
Not with those sweet art used from ASCII characters.
All right, listen.
I'm just saying.
I was hoping that one of you guys would pick up on this, but I guess not. You might ask, then, what would keep the player from just reading the manual and, you know, having the whole game spoiled for him and figuring out what the whole plot of the game was?
It's in reverse order.
Right? No, it's not in reverse order. Apparently, one thing that they would do that in order to combat this would, they would insert fake passages. They're actually not part of the game.
Seriously?
Yeah. So you wouldn't know what was true, what was not true.
So if you stole the manual but not the game, like, you'd be like, this doesn't make sense. But if you stole the game and not the manual...
It's like an encryption key, man.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Anyway.
They should still do that.
There definitely was a lot of discussion of the Spore DRM.
Yeah, getting back to that. This is what utterly mystifies me. Okay? So what does Spore do for copy protection? You can install Spore 3 times. What? What does this accomplish?
Well, how does it know that you install it? Because it actually phones home?
Somehow it knows.
Well, you have to register it online when you install it.
You guys talk while I cough my head off.
So basically it goes, okay, you installed this game, and you install it again, and it connects to the internet because you're going to be plugged in, and it's going to go, hey, you already did that 3 times.
And if you don't have access to the internet, I assume you can call a phone number and do it by phone?
Probably. It probably requires. So,
well,
like, you know, like,
it's like if
Windows does the same thing.
If you use up all your installs, then you have to, like, negotiate with them or, like, try to give them the reason why you need more.
Yeah, Windows is the same thing. We have to call and be like, yeah, I reformatted my computer, blah, blah, blah.
But this is really, really weird because it prevents nobody from doing anything until you get to that third install, and then you're utterly hosed. And apparently they had, I mean, I don't know. When you get to this third install, it's like, my guess would be that you're more likely a legit customer that is not pirating your game if you get to the third install. And now you have to deal with a lot of hassle.
Well, no, because then
because
the theory
the people,
is I could buy it, and you can install it on your machine, and I can install it on mine.
No.
Rich can install it on his.
No, because the people who pirate
but this
the
is
game
not how
already
games
have a pre-hacked version. You go online, you download the torrent, it's pre-hacked, and you just install it, and it doesn't matter if there's an install limit because it's not bound by that limit.
Right. What proportion of people actually pirate games by physically sharing the bought copy?
0.26% of those people.
It's like, I don't know, I have an incredible analogy on the tip of my brain, but it's not coming.
This is why we have Rich, the deviant, in our midst to tell us how people actually
pirate
games.
I've never pirated games.
And because apparently you can just torrent them and then it takes out that, which, I mean, it's clear.
Okay, so when we get back, we'll find out what Amazon.com did about all this DRM business.
All right, we'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's our last segment tonight and last chance for Spectrobe's international producer to redeem.
I have a feeling we missed that boat. And either I get an email saying, why were you guys such dicks on the air? Or something to the effect of, let's make that happen next week. Something tells me they're really looking for press. Right.
Something tells me
they're
that.
Doing a radio media tour.
Although I was thinking also,
I wonder if he has jazz hands
over the break. That it's a highly highly effective tool, perhaps to and efficient, I might add, to schedule interviews and not show up because then your hosts talk about it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't trying to dog the guy or the game or anything. I wanted to talk about it.
I didn't
care so much about the game. I wanted more about the marketing of it. But. Whatever, we certainly would have talked about it, rather than hearing Rich go, I don't know what the hell the game's about.
But certainly, certain,
it's like
certain
a DS
things, certain things
the
cannot
screen,
go unanswered.
For the record, it's gotten fairly good reviews. Like, if you're a fan of that sort of thing, feel free to go buy it. But
you know what's going to be cooler than Electrobes?
Spectrobes?
Yeah. Spectrobes.
Spectrobes will probably be better.
Can you F up the name anymore?
It doesn't really matter.
Just call it Electrobes.
You know what's
going
to be better than that game on the DS that we were going to have a talk about?
What, Spelectrobes?
Dead Space.
Okay, whatever. All right, let's go back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so
DRM.
Check this out. September 12th, Amazon.com. Guess how many reviews there are for Spore.
They took down all the reviews because everyone started throwing out these negative reviews
about
the DRM.
Guess how many number? Guess the number of reviews.
Zero.
That were September 12th?
Yeah. 86 million.
On the morning.
It was something in the hundreds, right, of negative reviews?
It was 2,216 reviews.
Of just people dogging it for having...
No, just in total.
Okay.
Of those, 2,016 were one star, which is the worst rating you can give. Yeah.
Awesome.
And yes, on that afternoon, apparently, they had deleted all of them, and then later on, they had been restored, and they said, oh, they were accidentally deleted.
Wait, they put all the one stars back?
According to my news source. Yeah.
That's...
Go to Amazon.com right now and find out.
I'll do that. I will go to Amazon.com.
This is high tech.
And big huzzah, we deleted them.
To remind everyone, if you want to support Chatterbox, then you can use the Amazon link on the side of our page. Even if you're not going to buy the game that's advertised there, buy other stuff, and then that helps us out because we don't have a lot of revenue streams here at Chatterbox.
Cash flow.
Only our one sponsor, UAT, the University of Advancing Technology, UAT.edu. They're wonderful, but...
We would love more revenue streams.
We should get, Gamefly to sponsor us.
Sure, it would be nice.
Because I'm paying them money right now.
Dude, we had Blockbuster once. I was getting free rentals from Blockbuster once.
That's Blockbuster.
We will accept cash over the phone.
So I'm heading over to Amazon. Can you hear my clicking? My typing on the keyboard?
I'll accept cash also directly
Please
to my bank.
Please click louder.
All right, so I'm going to Amazon. I'm going to go to... this is Spore for PC we're talking about, right?
So I'm just going to keep talking and entertain our listeners while
you
search
Spore
for
DS
you didn't prepare me ahead of time for that.
Spore for DS
has
a limited
radio.
Number
this
of three installs.
So actually, one thing that we were talking about over the break, which was interesting,
yeah,
funny guy, is that there's when people talk about piracy, there are certain parts of the industry who will continuously rattle off how bad piracy is, how many millions and billions and trillions of dollars in lost sales results from piracy.
Uh-huh.
And now we all intuitively understand that there's something wrong about that.
Dude, it's got an average of 1.5 stars.
That's fantastic.
There are 2,654 reviews at one star and 193 at five stars.
Nice.
And 193, by the way, is second place.
That's excellent.
That's, they put them all back up. I'm very surprised.
They did that with the Jack Thompson book.
And the first one is Dumbed Down Experience and Draconian DRM. See those older five-star reviews from 2006, 2 years before the game was released?
No, this is funny because this is, I think this is kind of a overblown response to their copy protection or their DRM.
Yeah, because it's not cool, reading the game.
But it's almost like all of the little pirators, they have like some kind of bizarre sense of justice or something where they're like, you know, we're going to band together and... You know, we don't pay for our software anyway, so no, we're going to put bad reviews because we don't want them to do this, and we want the publishers to bow to our collective power and something bizarre like that.
The people this affects, though, aren't the pirators. It's the people who actually buy the game. It's the people who buy the game, and then they're going to play it, and then maybe a year and a half from now, they're going to reinstall it again and play it. Come to find out 5 years later, this type of person decides, hey,
right,
but
what I'm saying is the response
again, and
is
they can't.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is that the response is a preemptive response, because I don't think that a lot of people have actually run into the problem where, oh, I've already gone through my three installs.
Not yet, because it's been a few months.
That's what I'm saying. It's preemptive. They're already expecting, they're going to be like, this is going to be a huge hassle. I'm not saying it's appropriate or not appropriate necessarily. I'm just saying it's interesting that they've just already decided that this is going to be a huge hassle for me in the future.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to react in this way now in expectation that, you know,
so they can
years later, when I try my third or fourth install or whatever, I'm going to go through a big hassle.
Well, see, I have a totally different viewpoint on this. What bothers me is that, like, I'm big into gaming history. Like, I know that I can break out the old NES and, you know, the NES that we tried to give you, Ara, that you didn't want to take. You remember that?
Yeah.
All right. So my girlfriend and I gave Ara these boxes, right? I said, all right, you can take the stuff in these boxes. He said, oh, really? You got games in there? I was like, yeah, dude, just take these. And that my one and only rule for us giving you these is that I do not ever get them back.
You got to tell the whole world about this, don't you?
Yes, these are the rules. I said, here, take these boxes with stuff in them because it's a bunch of crap, dude. I know you don't want it. He's like, I'll take it. I said, all right, the one rule is if you take it, it does not come back to me.
Did you take it?
2 weeks later, what does he do?
I have no
excuse. He gives me the boxes back.
I have no excuse.
You still have these boxes?
You know, it means a lot to me that you actually admit that.
In Japanese, I would say Moshiwaki arimasen.
Okay. What were in these boxes?
There's like an NES. There's two old PlayStations. I'm sure the PlayStations don't work, but the NES, I'm sure, is good. Anyway, my point is, there are these boxes, these gems, historical treasure. What's that thing that you put in the time capsule?
I'll take
them. Right?
Yeah.
Rich, I'll take them. Until you look inside.
I did watch Next Friday, though.
All right.
Next Friday? Not next,
yeah.
Next?
VHS tapes and, yeah, it's crazy. So, anyway, I could pull out the NES from there. I could go to some store and break out Mario Brothers and play it. Super Mario Brothers, whatever. Even the original Mario Brothers. So I could play, and it would work. But now, let's say, 10 years in the future, I have a copy of Spore. Wow, this was a super, you know, long-awaited game. Everyone loved it. It was from the creator of all these breakthrough titles,
right?
And I want to play it. Great. I'll install it on my computer that somehow has survived the 10 years and still runs Windows Vista or XP, right?
Right.
But it doesn't work. It doesn't work because there's no server to provide me with the license key.
It's kind of lame, but I don't know. I would just chalk it up to, I think by that time, I wouldn't really care about Spore that much. I don't know.
But the Smithsonian does.
You're playing Morrowind right now, which is a five-year-old game.
No, I'm not saying because of the age. I'm saying because it's Spore.
Well, I know. It's Spore, but I think the point still remains true. Like, yeah, for you, you don't care about Spore, but there might be people that do care about Spore that really want to play it. If in 5 years' time you're like, you know what? I just kind of want to play Morrowind again, and then you couldn't, you'd be kind of mad.
Yeah, and years down the road, there's going to be college classes.
If I couldn't play Fallout 2 this week in excitement for Fallout 3, I'd be really, really disappointed. But I can, because I downloaded it, and I'm playing it.
They made it available to you in another medium, which is great.
Yeah,
and you
which
can still have the old disc.
The GOG beta is sweet.
But it just bugs me, man, that these things aren't built for perpetuity.
Right. It's not a durable product any longer.
Yeah. It's truly just the IP.
That's a good point.
On some sort of transportation medium. You're not buying a cartridge. It's not something that can be resold or played in 50 years, presuming your hardware still functions, right? It's not going to happen. The only thing that can stop me from running my NES is if the U.S. converts to 220 power and I don't have it. Like, seriously.
Or if you blow on your cartridges too much.
Even that can be cleaned, man. Like, those ROMs will survive nuclear holocaust and not... That's what I don't like about the RM. I can't go play it in 20 years.
Well, that's perfectly understandable.
And this is also what I'm upset about downloadable content, right? Because I can't recover it. I can't resell it. I can't have it in perpetuity. Anyway, I make this complaint far too much in this program. But thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Tim, if you ever feel like calling in, maybe next week, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks. Hey, yeah, surprise us.
Next year, right? Maybe on a weekend.
For the sequel.
3 a.m.
Spectrobes
cool.
In the portals. I don't know.
Electrobes?
We need that as a soundbite. Electrobes? The end of every show. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, everybody. Go down to chatterboxgameshow.com if you want to learn more about our wonderful show. We'll see you next week.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases are belong to us.